Well, we're constantly interacting with others, whether it's in person or over the phone or online, and most of those contacts go pretty smoothly. But unfortunately, there are people out there who are looking to take advantage of us. Hi, Larry Mueller here. It's important that we talk about the situations we encounter so that others can avoid them when they're bad situations. And luckily, we have some consumer advocates who know what's happening around the state, and we're great to have them with us today. Sandy Chalmers, who's Sandy, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Thanks for coming by, Sandy. Appreciate it very much.
Good morning, Larry.
I should probably turn on your microphone. There, no.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning to you. And Michelle Wright. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much. Michelle's Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Always great to have you with us, too.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Well, are we, I imagine you're pretty busy. Holidays on us. We get more purchases. People are paying less attention. Are we seeing an increase in complaints?
Well, we know that cyber criminals particularly follow the money, and they know that there's a lot of online shopping going on. So we do see a lot of scams out there, and the FBI has warned about some in particular. There is one that has gone around every holiday season for the last 3 years or so. It's a text or email that looks like it's from UPS saying, you know, we need to confirm some things before we can deliver your package.
Yeah.
And people are so vulnerable to that right now because everybody does have packages coming from UPS. So, you know, bottom line here is to be very, very careful responding to unsolicited texts or emails, because you know what happens, Larry. You're usually prompted to, if you click a link in the text or email, you're prompted to enter personal information. Could be things that will just increase the number of unsolicited texts and emails. Could be, you know, requests for financial information like bank account numbers or credit card numbers. So that's one that's out there right now. Another one is a gift card scam. And people are so, you know, gift cards have become so popular. And in this scam, a seller will post an ad on an online auction site or online classified ad site for a gift card. Say, you know, $100 gift card for $20, and the gift card is not the value that is advertised, or it has no value even. So that's another one we know that's out there right now.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that, we were talking before the show today, and I most of my Christmas shopping gets done within 1 mile of my house, which is nice. And the cards, and I get some restaurant gift cards where if you spend $100, you'll get a $25 card to go along with it. Now, you have to use that card under, there are certain circumstances where you might not be able to use it every single night of a week. You might only be, you know, Sunday through Friday or something, but still. If you pay attention to the
terms,
to the terms, and they're all local businesses. So,
a lot of retailers have kiosks, you know, just full of gift cards for different retailers and restaurants. Yeah. And it really is best to buy from the merchant itself or from an authorized retailer, because it's just so easy now to say, I have a gift card for sale, post the ad on Craigslist, and you get the gift card, and there's nothing on it.
Yeah. Boy, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests today from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. You may have a question for them, and I haven't given you the number to call, so let me do it right now. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and we'd love to hear from you, of course. These gift cards, now I actually did a little, I went to a local shop, and the gift card there was typically due, you had to do it, use it within 6 months. And because there were several items attached to it, massage and that sort of thing, I just asked. I said, look, I would prefer to, since I'm buying sort of the larger amount here, I would prefer to have this for a year instead of 6 months. And she said, you know what? That's fine. She wrote it right on the card. But if you're not dealing with the owner directly, I think, you know, gift cards that run, you know, that expire are, you know, you have to be really careful about expiration dates on that, Michelle.
You do. Nationally, on gift cards, they shouldn't expire before 5 years. There was a federal law passed a few years ago, and so you should have 5 years to use that if the card's going to expire at all. And then it needs to be clearly disclosed to the consumer and so they know when it expires. Otherwise, there's plenty of cards that don't expire at all. But you do need to pay attention to see if there's any lack of usage fees that would be applicable to the card. And those should be clearly disclosed as well. And you shouldn't get charged more than once a month for inactivity on that card. And know what that fee is so you can figure it out. And if you're giving that card and there's all sorts of terms and conditions, make sure that the receiver of the card knows those terms and conditions so it all of a sudden isn't empty on them and disappear.
Yeah. Are there scams? Well, there are some scams, I guess, related to those gift cards.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're Craigslist type scams.
Yeah.
There is one that I've read some about where people can go in and scan the magnetic strip on the back of a gift card and strip it of its value. I've read about it. I haven't heard about that happening here, but certainly if you buy one of those cards from a retailer, look at the little package and make sure that it hasn't been tampered with. And if you can see the
scratch off. So people would do that out of pure meanness or something?
Well,
by scanning it, they then get the value of the
card
because they have a reader.
They're scanning it.
So they can go online and use it without actually possessing the card.
Oh.
So they get the value.
Oh. But they would have to get it out of its cellophane.
Well, what they would do would be take it off the rack and take it somewhere in the store where they could, you know, scan it and not be detected. And then they just leave the cards wherever. They'd be put back on the rack and there you go.
That's why so many need to be activated now before you can leave the store and you get the printout that shows when it was activated and for how much. And that little slip of paper becomes just as important as the gift card when giving it to the recipient.
Mm. Well, we suddenly lost our calls. Well, all these calls we had online, you know, we had a bunch here. And I think it was, I think our computer system has been acting a little flaky today. But give us a call. We'll get you on 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I was just happened to be looking at Rob Ferret, our on-air producer today, and our eyes both got big there all at the same time because suddenly everything disappeared from our screen. There you go.
Just like a gift card, it all just vanishes.
Rose in Madison, hi.
Hi, I have a question for your trained consumer protection expert.
Sure.
I hired a landscaper to do a stump grinding in addition to some other projects on the property, and they ignored my request to call Digger's hotline, and they severed an electrical line from home to the garage. And I have already taken steps through their website to print off the form and get that ball rolling, but having trouble finding in ordinances or through advice online, where does the responsibility lie for that choice that was made?
Depending upon what your contract stated, the liability may lie with the homeowner, unless it was part of the contract that the contractor would make the call. I can just speak from personal experience. This summer had the same thing with some trees down, had to have them taken down and ground. And while my contractor said that they were going to call, I just also called because... trust. No. It will depend on what your contract stated. And in the absence of a contract, I think that the utilities will probably come after the homeowner, and then you may need to follow up in a a court-related situation, but definitely file your complaint and let us take a look at that.
So I definitely have probably the most handwritten contract that says virtually nothing. It has his name, address, phone number, a short sentence about the explanation of work, and a round dollar amount estimate, and that was all. We didn't sign anything. I asked him repeatedly in person many times to call Digger's hotline to locate any gas lines. He did call for the gas line, I guess. That was marked. Digger's hotline was never contacted, and we repeatedly asked him. So he did contact one of the parties that needed to come out, I guess not the second party. And we have paid for the electrician to fix it. We had them come out and give us the minimal service to just repair and not improve on it. And it's coincidentally enough, like the same amount that he is probably going to try to bill us for. We haven't seen a bill yet. It's gotten very convoluted. So I'm just trying to find out where does my responsibility lie, because we did pay for the repair of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have the complaint form. You said you got that off the website. To make sure you file that so we can look at the actual paperwork and your statement of what happened, and then communicate with the contractor as well. If there is a contract, all things should be in writing if there is money up front. But then we're getting into all the details of the law. So I would just encourage you to follow through in filing that complaint.
And good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Katie in Stoddard, it's your turn. Hi, Katie.
Well, hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I had a question pertaining to a fraudulent check that my boyfriend received a few weeks ago. And the company exists. It was a large amount. It was like $2,100. But I wasn't expecting the check from anything. And then the routing number at the bottom was short one number. So we took it to the bank and said, what the heck is this? And the envelope it came in was really strange. Like, the stamp was in the wrong place, like right in the middle of the envelope. And nobody ever called back to follow up and get bank information. You know what I mean? It was just this floating check that landed in the mailbox addressed to him. And we can't, it obviously sketchy, but we can't figure out what they were trying to do.
That's really strange. There are a lot of scams that involve fraudulent checks as part of the pitch. And a lot of times they'll say that you've won a sweepstakes and even work at home type scams can involve fraudulent checks. So you may want to just keep that check and see what else comes up. And if somebody does contact you, we would be interested in hearing about that.
Okay.
For sure.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about consumer protection issues during this holiday shopping season with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network. Talking consumer issues today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. Just to let you know, Friday of this week, I will be in Milwaukee for my Garden Talk show. We'll be broadcasting from the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts, and you can be part of the live audience. It doesn't cost anything. There's a special invitation for me to be there. Get there a little early. We start at 11, obviously, but come around 10:30 or 10, and we'll have a chance to talk before the show. Melinda Meyer is my guest, so you can meet her as well, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So that's this Friday. The show obviously starts at 11, runs to 12:30. We're going to have a great time, so hope you can make it. If you're in the area, please do stop in. Andy in Madison has a question.
Yes, hi. My daughter received a Visa card for a birthday present, not a specific gift card, but one of those Visa cards you can use anywhere. And when she calls to activate it, they ask for her Social Security number. Is that legit?
I have heard that that has happened because it is a Visa card. It's more like a credit card, and
right,
then they do the checks versus a regular old store gift card, that they want to know for credit purposes Social Security information. So if you called the card direct, then then you should feel okay about that.
Okay. All righty. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Sharon in Durand. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I was just going to say, when she talked about scams, the other day on my cell phone, I received a text that said that I had won a $1,000 gift certificate from Best Buy. And so then I went online and I checked out Best Buy scams, and sure enough, it is a scam.
Yeah.
Would have been nice, but I think that, I guess that has circulated for Target and everything, and now Best Buy is back in it. So.
Yeah, that's been out there for a few months now. Walmart, Best Buy, you know, any well-known retailer, these crooks will use the name of a well-known, respected, trusted company and use that as a hook. And when you click on the link to claim your $1,000 gift card, you'll be prompted to enter information about yourself. And usually, you know, there are screens and screens and screens of personal information you have to enter. And guess what? At the end of it, there is no $1,000 gift card.
Well, I didn't even go to that, you know, to their website.
Yeah, that's definitely the best. Just don't respond to any of those unsolicited texts or emails. And it can get difficult, you know, if it's a company that you're used to doing business with,
yeah.
you got to be careful.
And if you have entered a contest, you think, oh, wow, I won.
Right.
Yeah.
But everyone wants to be a winner, and that's why we're vulnerable to falling victim to those kinds of scams.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sometimes it's just bad luck. I had somebody I work with was getting a new refinancing on a loan from the bank, refinancing the house, and then she gets this email from the bank saying, oh, we need to get your, you know, some information, some personal information for your loan. Well, she didn't think anything of it, and it was a scam. And she, it just by bad chance, it just happened that she had been just dealing with the bank that day. And she had to go through a bit of, you know, a bit of hassle to get that cleared up and get her name change there, Michelle.
When you're dealing with getting a new loan or anything, I would be on a heightened alert for extra mailers and calls and all that, because the bank you're dealing with is out there verifying credit scores and all that, and that can cause triggers that will then be sold to all sorts of other lending entities that may then start trying to solicit. So be on a heightened alert as to who you're talking with, dealing with, and giving your information and why they need it, and follow up with your personal banker, being sure that you're talking to that person regularly.
And remember that banks will not email you and ask you to verify personal information.
They just
and
don't
if
do
there's
that.
Any question, you call the bank directly and ask, you know, did you email me? And they'll tell you.
Pat in Genoa City, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling in regard to my roof. I had a new roof put on 15 years ago, and recently I just found, I don't know if it was the invoice or the ticket or the quote, but on there it says a 20-year warranty, and I need a new roof, and it's only been 15 years. Who's responsible for that? And I've talked to a couple people, and they say, well, good luck. Should I call the installer, the man who put it in? And some people tell me they're going to say, well, he'll just say you have to go back to the roofing company or, you know, whoever produced the roofing tiles. But I don't even know who that is.
Yeah.
You would want to start with your roofer, because mm-hmm. that's the individual who gave you a copy of the warranty or the guarantee. It depends what
no
it
copies.
Is.
That's the other thing, because I kept all the paperwork. All I have is that, you know, handwritten note, 20-year guarantee.
Yeah, definitely start with the roofer then to find out. The contract should indicate what type of shingle you purchased. And then, you know, you need to know exactly what the guarantee or warranty covered. It might just be the shingle itself, not everything else that goes into it. And so there may be a cost or expense for the labor and the undersheathing and everything else with the roof. But the start is going to be with the roofer. If you get no response, it's probably a consumer complaint, so we can follow up on that piece of the original contract. But it, depending upon what the guarantee is, it may or may not cover the roof. It just all depends on what the guarantee covers.
Yep. I see. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And again, to get a form or complaint form or whatever, Michelle?
You can call our 800 number, and that's 1-800-422-7128. Or you can go on to our website at datcp.wi.gov.
And we have a link to that on my Facebook page as well. So you just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you will find it right there. And Jim in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi.
Good morning. I'm wondering if you can give me some guidance on the application of Wisconsin sales tax. I've run into some inconsistencies lately. For instance, for holiday baking, some stores charge sales tax on chocolate chips, others don't. And similarly, when there are coupons involved, some stores charge sales tax on the cost before the coupon and some on the cost after it.
I would check the State Department of Revenue website, see if there's any information on their website. If not, there will be contact information there. But that would be under the jurisdiction of the State Revenue Department.
Okay. There we
go. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. And Dave in La Crosse. Hi. What's on your mind? Dave, are you there? Excuse me. I guess we didn't. His comment, there was a comment here on the line. Digger's hotline doesn't cover private lines. So if you yourself put in, like I did on a previous house, I ran a line from the house to the lake so I could have some power out near the lake. Digger's hotline apparently doesn't cover that. I don't know. That's at least that's what Dave in La Crosse said, but he's not there for some reason. So, well, if anybody wants to dispute that, let us know. Nancy in Waupaca, hi.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good, thanks for calling.
I'm calling to thank this department. They saved me like $400, and I am very grateful, and I wanted to publicly thank you.
Wow.
Well, thank you for calling and letting us know. It's always good to hear that feedback.
I was going to send you a thank you note, but I thought publicly you should know about it because my problem, I think, is a problem that other people have in my area. And the problem was that I had an air card with a major carrier, and I moved to Wisconsin permanently, and I couldn't get any signal on this air card for my computer. And I complained saying, oh, you know, I don't mind paying $70 a month, but give me some
service.
Right. And it turns out when I bought it, they had service in the area, and then the service was discontinued. And so they put me on 6 months of suspension, and then I should call them back and let them know if the air card works. Well, obviously, I needed service for my iPad and my computer, so 6 months went by, and then they started billing me again. And I tried working with a company, and it was only through a letter from you that they said, okay, you know, you don't have to pay. We're not going to charge you a penalty. And I was very pleased.
Oh, well, that is great news. Thank you, Nancy.
Well, thank the department. They did a good job.
Oh, big smiles on this end as we talk with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Ryden from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy's administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle is director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. They do a great job. You may have a question for them. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And also go to my Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Vivian in Racine, hi.
Hi, okay. I'm having work done on my car, and at least I'm getting estimates done. And I want to say to this mechanic, you're asking $100 more for this part than this other guy. And I don't want to make my mechanic all mad at me and like have him do shoddy service, but it just, I know there's different part makers and they vary, but it just seems like a lot. And is I don't it, know, I guess I'm wondering, do,
is it like the exact that same, they, is that exactly the same part and exactly the same manufacturer?
I haven't asked about the manufacturer. So, and should I do that? I mean, I don't want to be, you know.
It never hurts to just have a very open discussion with the person you want to do business with. You're not being rude or snotty or anything. You're just asking questions so you understand, and everybody can understand, trying to save money, you know, and make a smart, wise decision. And you want to do business with the person you've always done business with. So what can they do for you? Is it a manufacturer part that goes with your car? Let's just say a Honda. So it's a Honda part, or is it an aftermarket part? You know, what's the difference? What can they do for you? And just be communicating with them. And I think that they'll fully respect that.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry about it. I would. Well, you know, I've got a great guy, John, over at Monona Motors in Madison. In Monona, I would talk to him. I wouldn't hesitate a minute to bring it up with him, and he wouldn't hesitate to give me a straight answer.
Okay.
So.
Okay, well, that's helpful. Great.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Martina in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I heard someone talking a few minutes ago about triggers happening sometimes when you refinance a loan or you get a loan at a bank.
Yeah.
And we had an incident this year where we had refinanced our mortgage, and we started showing up with a charge on our Discover card from Equifax, who is someone you check your credit rating with. And we hadn't done anything with them, so we were kind of confused. We called Discover because there was two different charges from two different phone numbers, both listed under Equifax. And come to find out through Discover, they'd had an issue with this previously. Apparently, it is some kind of trigger that happens. It can happen even when you open a credit card with a store, something like that. And apparently they'll send out information about you, and it can get picked up like that. But it took a while to get the charges to stop. I just wanted to let you know Discover Card was extremely helpful in getting it fixed. But it did go on, like, for 6 months.
Oh.
We kept having to call them, and they you know, thought they had fixed it. And we had to change our credit card 3 times. So I hadn't been aware of that being something that was going on. I just thought I'd mention it.
Yeah,
that's a good reminder for everybody to be real detailed about watching their credit card bills, their phone bills,
yep,
and making sure that the charges are accurate and what they should be, and that you don't have anything that's called cramming, which is extra payments on your bill for services you haven't affirmatively ordered. So, you know, pay attention to that final amount and all the little detail line items, and contact the credit card company or your carrier right away and dispute those charges. So great job on that. Great job.
And I had contacted Equifax, too, and this was another thing that clued me on it was, when I called them and gave them the information, they didn't have an account with us. They didn't have our name. They did want Social Security number and all this kind of stuff. So that was another cue to me. But thank you very much for your show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Martina. We had the exact same thing. A couple of charges coming up, three in a row, and we checked with the card. Capital One was actually great. They got it was a scam. They got it fixed inside of a month, but then it popped up. We had to actually change our cards a couple times.
Yeah, I can think of several ways that may have happened. Those charges may have been started. But the key is to dispute the charges with your credit card company as soon as you see that charge that you don't understand. And the dispute process is set down in federal law. And credit card companies are generally pretty good about researching the charge and working with you to straighten everything out.
Yeah, I was very, very satisfied with the speed with which that company worked, and friendly, too. So it was great. Tammy in Rice Lake, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have a question. My daughter, it's actually about a cell phone carrier. Can I say their name?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. She ordered a phone. She has Verizon as a carrier, and she ordered this phone, and it came into the store, which is Wireless Solution in Rice Lake, and it was in her name but sent to the store. Now, there's a couple people that work at the store, and they took her phone home and did a tutorial on it, and I'm under the impression that they get paid for how many hits that these tutorials get on YouTube or whatever it is. But they had no authorization to take her property home, and now no one's being held accountable. She did notify Verizon Corporate, but it's like, who do we turn to get some accountability to these people that, you know, took her property home?
Oh.
Do we go to Verizon, or, you know, is it the franchise, the person that owns the franchise, or?
I would start with the person who owns the franchise and just ask them, you know, what their business practices are. Is it that you were charged for minutes on
no,
that phone?
No, it's that they took her property, you know, home and used it. You know, it was like an $800 new phone, and that's not right. They've been doing it with other phones too, and it just so happened that we found out about this. You know, how can a company not back you and say, you know, that's wrong? These people should be fired. They're taking people's personal property home. Who do we contact for that?
I would say the best thing to do would be to contact the store manager or the franchise owner.
I think the store manager's in on this, from what I understand. The owner is his name's Dan or something. We don't know how to contact him.
Yeah, and it's difficult to tell, you know, just based on what you're saying, whether there have been any violations of state law. But you can always file a complaint with us, and we'll follow up on it for you.
Yeah, the phone number is 1-800-422-7128. If you want to call in, 422-7128, if you want to call and get a complaint form. Or you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I've got a link right to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. You can go right there. And can you print complaint forms off from the website?
You can download a complaint form and fill it out and turn it in, and soon you should be able to fill it out online and email and just submit it as well.
That'll be nice when that happens. We had lots of contractors have called already, and Digger's Hotline only covers the public utility lines, not the private ones. So that's something for an earlier call, and probably for a lot of other people too who may have occasion to call Digger's Hotline. Marilyn in Dover, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I receive almost daily, at least several times a week, a call from someone who insists that they have to talk to us to arrange for reducing our credit card rate. And they give you an option, if you don't want to receive the calls, to push, I think, pound. I've done that a million times. That doesn't do a thing. One day I hung on the line and I pressed the button to talk to the person that was supposed to take care of your credit card, and she announced that her record showed that we owed $120,000.
Wow.
And I said, I beg your pardon. Do you have the right, Anderson? I said, we always pay off our credit card a month, so every month. So I said, you would not receive any interest from us. And she promptly hung up.
Yeah, well, Larry,
and
we
keep getting those calls. And for a while, there was the name with it, and it was Rachel. And we heard from Rachel almost every day. Now they don't give a name, and they have a very, well, you just can't copy down their number that fast.
Yeah.
Right. You are not the only person who's plagued by these calls. And, it's people all over the world who are being called with these phony scams. What makes it difficult for us to track down is that, number one, most of these callers are located overseas in boiler rooms, and they can pick up and move, as soon as they feel that somebody's on to them. They always tell you to press a button if you want more information or if you want to be taken off the list. What we recommend is the instant you hear a pre-recorded message, just hang up. Don't press a button, because that lets them know that you have that number they just dialed is a live number. And of course, if I don't know if you've ever talked to a live person, but they will engage you and try to get all kinds of information from you. So the best advice we have on these robocalls is to just hang up.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you so much for calling, Marilyn. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection are guests today as we talk with them about holiday shopping and consumer scams. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in as we talk consumer scam issues with Sandy Chalmers, Administrator in the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, who directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection. So great to have both them along. They come by about once a month or so to talk about these kinds of issues. And they, like you, probably wish we didn't have to talk about these kinds of things. But unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever, they'll ever be out of work. You'll never be out of work, will you, Sandy?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Joan and Madison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have been kind of watching over my elderly parents, and I was helping them with their taxes, and I found a reoccurring charge on their Visa bill for $34 from a company called Earthlink. I recall that back in 1997, if you can believe this, when you were still paying to get an email account, I helped my parents set up an account with this company called Earthlink to get an email account. We had bought them a computer, and shortly after, they were kind of not using the email account, so we canceled it about a year later. That would have been 1998. And sure enough, what's been happening since 1997, Earthlink has been billing my parents on my dad's credit card since 1998. And believe it or not, my parents' Visa number has changed several times over the years, and somehow Earthlink is continuing to get the updated credit card numbers without contacting my parents. Apparently, they could get that through the bank. In addition to that, I contacted Earthlink. They said that we never got a bill. My parents haven't gotten a bill. And they said they've never mailed them bills. They email the bills to the Earthlink email account that my parents haven't looked at since 1998. And they said, so when I said, we've been charging us for a service, an email service. They haven't looked at the email since 1998, and you're billing them via email, which I don't think you can do if I'm wrong. Anyway, it's a mess, and I just need some advice.
Wow.
The best advice I can give you today, Joan, is to file a consumer complaint so we can help you unravel this. It's great that you remember canceling it, and any documentation or phone conversation that you have is going to be really important in your complaint. but we're going to have to go way back on that. And you can email bills. Plenty of companies do that. They need to inform you that's how you're going to get your bill or sometimes
right.
get your permission or authorization.
And right,
it,
and
it
I don't
may
think,
have been
yeah.
way back. But let's have you go to the website or call the 800 number and file that consumer complaint with all the
okay.
detail that you told us today.
Okay. All
yeah,
right. Sorry for all the detail. It's just been so frustrating. And
oh, it's that's thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and that again is another important reminder for consumers. If they have an automatic charge deducted from their credit card and then they discontinue with a company, to really pay attention for the next, you know, number of billing cycles to make sure that the charge doesn't reappear on the bill and making sure that the cancellation happened. And I often ask certain companies to send me a letter of cancellation so there's documentation that they have in fact canceled me as their customer.
No.
Yeah, that's a good, and I just urge anyone who has elderly parents to have someone check on the billing process that they're doing.
Yep, that's very good advice. Thanks, Joan.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Oh, man. Sometimes. Steve in Wonder Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. I have two quick items on the robocalls. First of all, if anyone wants to, you can just Google the telephone number itself, and you will find any number of blogs where people are posting what they know about that particular organization. They can even give you company names and things. Then, more importantly, and unfortunately I'm in the car, so I do not have the URL, but there is an FCC website in there. I think it's probably the Consumer Protection Division. It's pretty easy to find on the Internet for reporting telephone numbers. If you can provide the name of the company, and sometimes they will give it to you, sometimes they'll just hang up and be very rude. But if you just report, I think if enough people report the phone numbers, they can probably do something about that. So if you go on the FCC website, and I think it's probably a fairly a popular link, so it might be one near the top or on the left that says, you know, consumer reports or something like that.
All right. Well, we can take a look. Sandy, are you familiar with it, or Michelle?
I'm not. We do coordinate with the Federal Trade Commission and the FCC on these robocalls, and our state laws, you know, just don't give us the jurisdictional reach we need to go after these operations in foreign countries. So we do forward a lot of our complaints on robocalls to the feds, and then they partner with their companion agencies overseas.
Mm. There we go.
It's the Federal Communications Commission, and their website in Washington, it's, you know, FCC.gov, and then you'll have to find a link. But they have an actual page. You can report the phone number, and if you can get the company name, and I think they want the date and time. And you might want to, you know, find that yourself and have people in your office well aware of it as well. And then, of course, you can put it on your Facebook page too, Larry.
Yep, we can do that. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Steve. Appreciate it. We can do that, definitely. Eloise in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi. Oops, sorry. Got Ron instead. Ron in Newburgh, it's your turn. Hi.
Yes. Hey, this is just an absolutely opportune call. I got a call this morning, and I was coming in the door, so I didn't get to the phone quick enough, but I looked up on the phone. It says, hey, this number called you. So I called them, and they profess to be AmeriCollect, a collection agency going back to surgery that I had in 2008 that got messed up. And they tell me that there have been numerous attempts to contact me. They've sent me paperwork. They have talked to me. None of this has happened over that many years, and now they're coming back was saying that this will affect my credit rating.
Yeah.
Does this sound like a legit outfit?
Well, it depends. I mean, there are collection agencies, and they do follow up if there is any debt, and they seem to have quite a few specifics. But the questions you'll have to consider in determining if it's legitimate is, you know, was there any outstanding billing? Did it all get resolved? I'd go back to the original company or hospital or clinic that you dealt with, the original biller, and follow up with them to see if there was any outstanding debt left. And then you could deal with the collections if the information matches.
Sometimes a business, if I'm not mistaken, will, they've got a, you know, they've got a series, maybe you've got 50 bills that are unpaid way, way years back. They'll turn it over to an agency and just, you know, thinking even if we get pennies on the dollar, it's better than nothing. And in this case, Ron, it may be that there's a legitimate, or your name was mistakenly on that list. And
that does happen.
And that
too.
Does happen. So a lot of different ways to look at it. But Michelle, great advice, I think, to get back to the original.
Right. A little bit of legwork there.
Now we'll go to Eloise in Milwaukee. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I have senior care with the state of Wisconsin, and every year when you renew and have to, send in your check, they ask you to put your Social Security number on the check. I have argued with them a couple of times, and now I just go ahead and put my case number on instead. But a couple of years ago, senior care sent out mailings to all the people that were on senior care and put the Social Security number on the outside of the envelope, and they ended up having to pay for a year's credit tracking for all of us. They seem to not have learned their lesson from this. Now, to me, that's an invitation for identity theft. Can't people lift your Social Security number from a check? How many hands does this check go through?
Well, you're very wise to be concerned about protecting your Social Security number. That's the easiest way for identity theft to occur, is just as you described, the wrong people to get their hands on your Social Security number. And there have been a few well-publicized breaches, data breaches, in the last 5 years or so. And my mother was even involved in one involving the Department of Revenue. I would call, if you have a case manager or there's contact information on that letter, I would call them and ask them why they need this. Is it required by law? And just ask what they're doing to protect your personal information. You know, it's one thing to have it stored in a database somewhere, but what are they doing to protect your check? You know, what kind of processes do they have in place to make sure that those checks aren't left laying on somebody's desk where it could be viewed by a janitor or, you know, who knows?
Or anybody.
Yeah. So I think you're very wise to be concerned about this. And all I can say is follow up with the people at senior care and see what they have to say.
Yeah.
I tried that. I mean, I called 2 years in a row. I called and asked these very questions, and all I got was, well, you have to do that. You have to do that. And I thought, I'm not doing that. So I on my own initiative, just put my case number on instead. And they have been accepting it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think a lot of people just blithely put their Social Security number on and don't give it a thought.
Yeah. Which is apparently a case number works too.
Yeah.
So that's Eloise, thanks for calling. That's you may have given some advice to other people who are in the same boat as you are, that they might want to try that same thing. Appreciate your call very much. Thank you for calling. Before I go back to the phones, are there some social network scams that are going on these days, phishing scams that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, a common one, especially now around the holidays, you'll see a phony promotion offering a free iPad or something like that, and the bait is always something that everybody wants, like an iPad, and when you click the link, you know, it's the same old thing, Larry. You'll be prompted to enter personal information. Just be aware that those scams are out there, and they're very, very common.
Very, very common. And, you know, tax time, we've had one or two tax-related comments already, but that's another one. Tax right after, you know, like the first of the year, my mind turns from holidays to taxes, and I imagine there's some scams out there with taxes too.
Well, yes, there are, and for the first time, we had last year, we had a very big problem in a lower income area of Milwaukee. A tax preparation company was using the lure of quick cash, you know, instant holiday cash to get people in the door. They'd fill out their forms to get their quick cash, and then without their knowledge, a tax return was filed on their behalf. So be very watchful for that kind of scam. People are vulnerable right now. You know, there are a lot of people out there that could use some quick holiday cash.
Yeah.
But if you're walking in the door of something that bills itself as a tax preparation company, and you're going in the door for quick cash, ask them, are you going to file a tax return on my behalf? Or, you know, what's going on here? Had a lot of people ripped off last year, unfortunately.
That is really too bad. That is really too bad. Talking today with Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and as well Michelle Reinen, who is Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection here in Wisconsin, about holiday shopping and consumer scams. And they will be with us right up until 12:30 today. So you stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about consumer scams, holiday shopping and consumer scams. There are lots of them out there, unfortunately. Our guests, experts in this area, Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle, great to have you back.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. And Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Sandy, thanks again for coming by.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
We had an email from Sandra, who someone attempted to use her personal information to apply for a credit card. Fortunately, the bank flagged it and called her first. Since then, she's paid the $10 per agency fee to freeze her credit report. This seems like a perfect solution. Is there a downside, aside from the nominal fee, to unfreeze my account if I ever need more credit? And when something is, when you freeze it, what actually is happening there? What's the process?
What happens when you put a freeze on your account is that the lending institution is going to contact you before they do an extension of credit. So that way someone can't hack your information or prevents identity theft from them going out and acting as you. And so there is a fee to put the freeze on, and there's a fee, a $10 fee, to lift the freeze when you need to go buy a new car and get a loan or mortgage, or if you want to get a store credit card. They're going to do a credit check, and in order to give you that credit card, that you need to make sure you don't have a freeze on your account. So, you know, personally, from how I see it, the only disadvantage to having a freeze is if you're in a position of needing to get credit or a bunch of credit. If you're a new, if you're a college student and applying for credit cards and maybe getting a car loan and you're in a heightened state of needing credit, then that's probably not the best time to be freezing, unfreezing, freezing, unfreezing. It's going to add up because it's for the different credit reporting agencies. But if you're pretty locked in with the credit that you have and you're not, you don't need any more credit cards, you have your mortgage if that's what you need and your car loan, you're in a more stable position to just put the freeze on and not worry about that. And that way you'll be protected from someone getting your information.
Sandy in Sun Prairie has a question for you. Sandy, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with my telemarketers calling on my telephone, and I don't answer any of them because I've heard you say before, don't answer the calls. But I don't take any of them, but they keep calling back and calling back. And I'm wondering, is it because my answering machine is picking up the call?
I think that everybody in the country is experiencing the same thing. I don't know that it's whether your answering machine has anything to do with it or not, but it is such an enormous problem. And the advent of internet calling and now calling from the cloud makes it very, very difficult to track down these people mm-hmm. that are placing the calls.
Right.
The Federal Trade Commission in Washington, D.C. just offered a $50,000 reward to anybody who can figure out how to make these calls stop. So that's what a severe problem it is. I think usually if you have an answering machine, it will hang up as soon as it detects that there's not a voice on the other end.
Right. They because hang up, but then they can't keep calling back.
If your answering machine does pick up, they have to pay for that call. So they usually hang up before. But mm-hmm. the phone still rings, and it's still annoying.
Yeah.
And even if you're on the no-call list, it doesn't matter to these people.
Well, I am. And the only thing I was concerned about was I didn't want to have to turn my answering machine off. You know,
sure.
I thought if that's what was causing it, then I would be missing calls that I really wanted. So.
No, I don't think.
Okay. Well, that was the question that I had for you.
Okay.
And you've answered it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Louise in Trempealeau County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, I have a question about our family sold some things that needed to be recycled to a recycler from China through an interpreter. He paid us about a third of what he owed us, and it's been over a year, and he hasn't paid the rest. Is there any recourse?
So this, you recycled this or sent it to China?
They came and loaded it and in big 40-foot containers that went on ships to China.
Oh, boy.
Did you have a contract about what the exchange was?
No, because every time there was a lot of stuff and every time we had... they had to negotiate for what was in the container.
Do you have their contact information, a business card about who you did business with?
We have the my son did most of this, and so I can't tell you exactly what he has from China, but he speaks with the interpreter about every 2 weeks, and so we have his phone number. And I'm not sure what else we have, but I think we could get the rest of the information if we don't have it from the interpreter.
Yeah, you may want to file a complaint with us and we can look, but I can think of no specific law that would govern this transaction that we would really have any authority over. So you may end up having to have yourself or your son speak with an attorney to see what kind of agreement you maybe had with the company and may need to take some private legal action.
Is there some, could you tell us kind of the nature of the you know, you don't have to give the specific, but sort of the nature of the kind of things that you were dealing with?
It was telephones.
Telephones, okay. Well, that is, I think Michelle's given the right advice here. I'm not sure how else we can help you. It's always can be a problem when you're dealing with folks from other countries. And
but at the very least, we could let the state economic development folks know that there may be an issue with this particular company, so that they can let others in the state know that you know, think twice before doing business with this particular Chinese company.
And so would filing with you then be the...
And we would coordinate with other
coordinate
state agencies
it.
And any appropriate federal agencies
okay.
as well.
All right. So, Louise, you should get a form then.
Knowing this might help the money to come through. If
yeah.
they know they're going to be put on a list and yep. banned from other sales.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Louise. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Wanakee, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I have a situation that I kind of don't know which way to turn on it. It's regarding possible identity theft via one of the social networks. Well, I can just mention, I don't think it has anything particularly to do with the particular company, but it's a program called LinkedIn. And apparently somebody has hacked into my computer because we just got a call from a friend in another state. And this friend, it was his wife who called, and he's been dead for a number of years, and I haven't sent him an email. Well, apparently somebody has gotten a hold of the control of these. They have these things where they send you, well, you haven't contacted us back, and you know, they send it in my name, and I have nothing to do with it. I get a call from my brother. He works for a defense contractor, and you know, unfortunately, they are able to they block all social media kind of email contacts. But he said, well, you know, if you're trying to get a hold of me, give me another email. I said, I didn't send that to you. I don't even know your work email address. And so it's sort of like totally out of my – I contacted my email provider, and they changed my passcode and so forth. But this stuff just keeps coming back. Well, people all over say, well, hey, I told you I'm not interested in this. And I said, I didn't send that to you. What do I do to get out of this? I closed my account with LinkedIn, and I've been trying to get a hold of some computer specialists to see what could be done about that. But I don't know which way to turn on this thing. It's very embarrassing to, you know, get a call like that.
Yeah.
Well, sure. You know, you are, you know, I thought you, like our friend said, has Jim lost his mind? I didn't send that.
Yeah,
Sandy?
We're trying to remember whether there was a data breach at LinkedIn. It was a part of a really big data breach that involved a number of companies. And what happened was that hackers hacked into the through the security walls of these of LinkedIn and others and posted passwords or parts of passwords. So you may have been caught up in that if we're remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think you're doing everything correctly as far as working with a security specialist and making sure that the virus or whatever it is no longer affecting your computer. But that it's a good warning for people. You know, hackers will get into and take control of your contacts, your Facebook friends, your LinkedIn contacts, and use your computer then to send them email. So when you get email that appears to be from a friend, you have to be skeptical, even though it appears to be from one of your Facebook friends.
And occasionally I'll get something from, and this hasn't happened to me, but I'll occasionally get something from a friend who will say, look, you may have already received some weird thing from, supposedly from me, but it's not really from me. And just, they send it to everybody on their list just to alert people that there's a scam out there, and it's not me. I can't help it. It's not me. I'm doing my best to try and get rid of it. So that's something you might think about, Jim, too. Just sending a note to everybody on your email list and say, look, I'm not doing this, and I'm sorry that somehow my name was or my email address was stolen.
Right, because that way if there's any links or anything attached, people have fair warning.
Yep, absolutely. Arlene, thanks again for calling. By the way, you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Here's a call from Arlene in Madison. Hi, Arlene.
Well, I have another reason why you should never answer one of them. After so many, I was so irritated, and I finally answered one. And I said, just what do I have to do to have them stop? And in return, I got a very rude sexual comment from the, can't call him a gentleman, from the man on the other end. Very, very rude. And so needless to say, that's just another reason not to answer.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that from a lot of people, and that tells you right there this is not a legitimate business because they don't treat their customers or potential customers like that. But you know, they're true boiler room operations, and the instant they get the feeling that you're not involved in being a sucker, you know, mm-hmm. they'll just move on to the next person because they're losing money by talking to you.
Right, exactly. So anyway, that's it. Thanks so much for a great show.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Rob Ferret, our on-air producer, just did a little check and checked LinkedIn. And in fact, there was a data breach in June of this year. So our previous caller who had that problem, it may have been part of that.
So, yeah, if that caller would look at the LinkedIn website and check for any advice that LinkedIn provided at that time, that would be a good idea.
Absolutely. And you can join in, too. We've got open lines, finally. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with our two guests today, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, about holiday shopping and consumer scams. Again, that's 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We'd really appreciate it. We have a lot of callers online here. So what I'm going to do is take a call. We'll just wait a minute before we do that. Hurricane Sandy didn't impact us directly, but some fraudulent auto sales may be taking place that are related to that disaster.
AAA just issued a warning on this, and it makes sense, you know, given the hundreds of thousands of cars that must have been damaged. Just be aware that there are flood-damaged cars out there, and if you buy a car, especially at an auction, an online, through eBay or Craigslist, be careful that you understand what you're buying. And some of the tips I've seen are to look for dried mud, you know, mm-hmm. Under the hood.
Yep.
Or if it's an older car and there's new carpet, that's probably a red flag. And if you can, pry the carpet up and see if there's sand underneath. So just be extra careful knowing that there are so many damaged cars out there on the market right now.
And there's some possible timeshare scams going on out there, too, aren't there? People phoning, getting unsolicited calls, so forth, Michelle?
There are. There's some timeshare resellers that are calling consumers and trying to make sure or trying to offer them a way of reselling an unwanted timeshare. Not sure how they're getting all the information, but make sure that you're, you know, asking the salesperson for all the information in writing before they enter into any deal, because they will make it sound really good as to what they're going to do, charge a lot of money, and they may just put in posts online, which is something that you can do yourself. So get all those details in writing. Make sure that they'll advertise the timeshare exactly how, what the fees are, the timing, how often they'll do it, how current they'll keep the ad.
And one other I wanted to bring up was this possible medical alert scam that's going on out there that people should know about,
yeah,
Sandy.
Yeah, we've been hearing from elderly people who have been called by somebody selling senior alert systems, and we haven't tracked down many of the details right now, but to us, it's a red flag that this company is calling people on the no-call list. So that in and of itself means that something may not be quite right.
Yeah, so be on the lookout. Phyllis in Chippewa Falls, hi.
Hi. Really enjoying your program today.
Thanks.
I have a situation with our garbage hauling company. We pay for recycling pickup, and I carefully clean and sort my recycling and put it out there. I observed him Friday when he picked up, and he just dumped our recycles in with the regular garbage. And this is a national company. 2 years ago, they were sending a separate truck to pick up recycling, and now they're not doing it anymore.
That is...
Have you talked to the garbage company about it? Maybe they're doing a different kind of sort and have changed their collection practices. So
I have
it doesn't
not done
mean
that yet, but I intend to.
Yeah.
I call you first.
I would follow up with the collection company and see what they're doing and express your concern that your recyclables aren't being recycled and see what they have to say about that.
Yeah.
I do have a personal alternative. I can take them to our rural town hall, you know, and do it there. So I am not locked into the company, but I don't want to pay for it if they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
I can understand
right.
that.
Especially if you're being charged for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck. Give them a call. And if you're not getting a good response or something that you're not agreeing with, you should call the 800 number, 1-800-422-7128. I have the old number running around in my head. 1-800-422-7128 is the number to call. Mike in Coon Valley. Hi, thank you for calling.
You bet. We've been getting a lot of contacts from Google by phone and through the email, telling us that we have to do this update to for our website. It costs a fee, of course, to get on top of all these different search engine lists that they are involved with. And I've got a lot of messages on the phone from them. I did pick up twice with them, and as soon as I tried talking, both times they hung up on me. Is there, you know, anything going on that, you know, on something like that order?
Well, that's weird.
I don't really know what to say. I mean, if it were legitimate, you'd think that they would want to actually talk to you. And
yeah.
I don't know. I would just be very leery. I mean, it sounds a little bit like the Microsoft tech support scam where you have a well-known, respected brand name, Google, and, you know, there is an advertising component to that and a marketing component, but I don't know how they market to people. You may want to check on the Google website and see, and just Google scams and see what pops up.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And quick question from Cheryl and Cecil. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. My question is, I put some dining room set on Craigslist. And, like, the day after, I get these emails, and they say, love your dining room set. I will pay the full price. I will send you a cashier's check, and a truck will pick it up. But they want your address, your phone number, and all this. And it turned on some red lights for me.
Yeah, a quick response, yeah. Michelle, in 15 seconds?
You know, always be cautious of just that. You've done the right thing. If you can, you know, ship to them or make a different arrangement, have someone present just in case. But there should be more to the transaction than that, you'd think.
Yeah, you definitely would. So be careful, Cheryl. And everybody else, you be careful, too. And I thank you all for listening. And Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. Excuse me. Thank you so much for being with us today. Losing my voice. And thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.